So we've said, and we say again, that karma is a form of this principle of conditionality. And this is the first thing that we must understand about it. Nothing mysterious, nothing odd, nothing queer, nothing occult. Nothing of that sort. It's just a form of this principle of universal conditionality. In other words, karma represents the law of conditionality itself at work on a certain level of existence, on a certain level of life. Sometimes, of course, confusion arises. Sometimes karma is itself regarded as the universal principle. Sometimes people say that karma means the Buddhist teaching of the law of cause and effect, and it's universal. But this is not so. The universal principle is conditionality. And this principle of conditionality is operative in different ways on different levels. And karma is only one of these. And this is made clear in another very important teaching. It's a rather later teaching. It's more an Abhidharma than a Sutta teaching. But it's a very useful teaching because it ties together strands which are left rather loose and disconnected in the suttas. The teaching of the five niyamas. The word niyama means a natural law, a cosmic order. And as I've said, there are five of them. Let's take a brief look at them. First of all, there is Utu niyama. Utu is the Sanskrit ritu. Utu means the world, the whole world of non-living matter. I know that nowadays people are beginning to doubt whether there is any such thing as non-living matter, but let's just call it non-living matter, at least for the time being. In other words, this is the physical, inorganic order of existence. And Utu niyama is the law of cause and effect, or the principle of conditionality as operative on this level, the level of non-living matter, the level of the physical inorganic. In modern terminology, this comprises the whole world of physics and chemistry. And Utu niyama corresponds very roughly to the laws of physics and chemistry pertaining to this physical inorganic order of existence. Secondly, bija niyama. Bija means seed. And this is the world of living matter, what Tyler de Chandor calls the biosphere. In other words, the physical organic order. And the laws governing, the laws pertaining to this physical organic order are comprised, of course, in the science of biology. And then thirdly, there's citta niyama. Citta is mind. And citta niyama is conditionality as operative in the world of mind, what Tyler de Chardin again calls the noosphere. And here there's a very important suggestion, a very important implication, that mental activity and development are not haphazard. They're governed by laws. We're accustomed to the idea of law as operative in the world of matter, the physical inorganic order. We're accustomed to the idea of law as operative on the level of life, the biological. But we are not so accustomed to the idea of law as operative even on the mental level. We tend to think, or at least we used to think, of mental happenings as sort of just happening, not being due to any particular causation, any particular conditionality, not sort of governed by laws. Since Freud batch, we know better than that now. But this point of view, this idea, or this insight, that mental life too is governed by law, that mental phenomena also arise independent on conditions, this hasn't perhaps very deeply penetrated into popular thinking. But here we find it in Buddhist teaching, all these centuries ago, in this formulation, this third niyama, the citta niyama, conditionality, or if you like, the law of cause and effect, as operative in the world of mind. And this whole conception corresponds to the modern science, we may say, of psychology. Then fourthly we come to kamma niyama. Kamma being the Pali for karma. And karma means action. But action in the sense of deliberately willed action. And because karma is deliberately willed action, it's sometimes said in Pali or Sanskrit that karma equals chaitana. In the Sanskrit and Pali texts, the simplest and the shortest, the most compendious definition of karma is simply this equation. Karma equals chaitana. Chaitana is both mind or consciousness and will. The two are not split. It's a conscious volition. Chaitana. So this is karma. And karma niyama covers or corresponds to or pertains to the whole world of ethical responsibility. It's the law of cause and effect, the principle of conditionality operative on the moral plane. Now, perhaps it's rather difficult for us to understand this, us in the West. We tend to think, or we have tended to think, in terms of reward and punishment. Reward for good deeds, punishment for bad deeds. We see in ordinary social life, if you commit a crime, what happens? You're arrested. You're hauled off to jail. You're produced in front of the magistrate or the judge. You're tried. You're convicted. You're sentenced. And you're sent to jail or you're fined. So, you've committed a crime and you are punished. The two are quite separate. There's someone who punishes you. The society. There's the police. There's the judge. There's the law. So we tend to think in the same way when it comes to morals. We tend to think of sin and the punishment of sin, virtue and the reward of virtue. And traditionally, we've tended to think in terms of a judge too, who sees what you've done, that you've committed this sin and that sin, or you've performed this virtue or that virtue, and he punishes you, rewards you accordingly. And this judge is, of course, God. And sometimes people imagine God as holding a sort of tremendous quarter sessions, with everybody hauled up in front of him, everybody, and the angels and demons standing around like the police, and everybody is either sentenced or rewarded. This has tended to be the way in which people have thought, and thought very seriously. And this is still official Catholic doctrine, in a sense official Christian doctrine, that when you die you face your judge. This is a terrible thought for the Christian, especially the Orthodox Christian, that you're holed up in front of the transcendental beak, and off you go, wherever he sends you. I mean, this has sometimes given rise to great literature, great poetry, great art. Everybody knows Michelangelo's tremendous painting of the Last Judgment in the Sistine Chapel, in the Vatican, in Rome. But be that as it may, it's rather poor philosophy, rather bad theology, and we're still, as it were, suffering from the hangover of that sort of thought. And this is not the Buddhist point of view. The Buddhist point of view is one that seems to us, with this sort of hangover, in this sort of context, with this sort of tradition, which seems to us distinctly odd. The Buddhist believes, or Buddhism believes, in law without a lawgiver, and without anybody who administers the law. And this is strange indeed. I've heard Christian missionaries arguing with Buddhists saying, but if you believe in a law, there must be a lawgiver. And they can't see it in any other way, but the Buddhist says no. There's law, but no lawgiver. The law, as it were, administers itself. The Buddhist would say, well, you've got the law of gravitation. But you haven't got a god of gravitation pushing and pulling things. The law of gravitation works itself. It's just a generalized description of what happens to falling bodies. That's all the law of gravitation is. And in the same way, we don't have a god of heredity or a god of sexual selection. These things just happen. They just go on in that sort of regular way. They work themselves. So Buddhism says it's much the same on the moral plane. Good karma naturally results in happiness, and bad karma naturally results in misery. No one is needed to come along and take a look at what you've done and then fit the punishment or the reward to the deed. It happens of its own accord. It administers itself. What good and bad mean in this particular context, we shall be seeing a little later on. But it means, as it were, that from the Buddhist point of view, what we call good and what we call bad are sort of built into the structure of the universe. This might sound dreadfully anthropomorphic, and we are putting it rather crudely, but it really means that from a Buddhist point of view, the universe itself is an ethical universe. Or rather, the universe is an order of conditionality, and this order functions at a certain level, that is to say the karmic level, in a way that we would or could describe as an ethical manner, i.e. it conserves ethical values. So this is kamma niyama. Fifthly and lastly, dhamma niyama. Dhamma or dharma here means simply spiritual as opposed to mundane. And the principle of conditionality operates on this level too. I would say that some of the more popular traditional explanations of what dhamma niyama is are a bit simple, not to say childish. According to some accounts, when the Buddha gained enlightenment and when he died and on other such occasions, the earth shook and trembled in six different ways. And according to them, this is due to the operation of dhamma niyama. But I would say that in fact dhamma niyama corresponds to the spiral type of conditionality. Those who have attended previous lectures know that, broadly speaking, there are two kinds of conditionality, cyclical between terms which appear as opposites, and spiral as between terms which progressively augment one another, the succeeding augmenting the effect of the preceding term or preceding factor. No time to go into that this evening. But roughly speaking, the first four niyamas, the uttu niyama, bija niyama, citta niyama, kamma niyama, these correspond collectively to the cyclical type of conditionality. They're all types of conditionality in the sense of action and reaction between factors which appear as opposites. And dhamma niyama, the fifth niyama, which constitutes, we may say, the sum total of spiritual laws governing progress along stages of the path. This corresponds by itself to the spiral type of conditionality. Now, from all this, it should be clear that karma is not the law of conditionality in general, but only that law as operating on a certain level. That is to say, the ethical level, the plane of moral responsibility, of good and bad, or good and evil.